Well, Australia is yet to decide, but already the US, Europe and Middle Eastern nations say they will rush medical help to India as COVID infection rates there continue to break records, with dire implications for desperate Indian families and for the global effort to contain the pandemic. For the fifth day running, India, with a population of 1.3 billion, hit a new global high of almost 353,000 daily reported cases. 195,000 Indians are now known to have died from COVID, but experts say the numbers are almost certainly an undercount. But India's central government continues to offer no new plan, despite the near collapse of the health system and of key parts of the formal economy. Anu Buyan is a health reporter in New Delhi, now exclusively reporting the COVID story. She works for the data journalism project India Spend.
It's a terribly unfortunate situation in India right now. Unfortunately, Twitter has kind of become the government, you know, become the sort of redressal portal for people to go to because of an absolute breakdown of any government accountability or any government system. So, I mean, people are just trying their luck with keywords, you know. If you want remdesivir and you're in luck now, you'd probably use the Twitter search option and you'd search for remdesivir, luck now, urgent, and those are the keywords you would use, and you'd try and hope that you find something. But that's the situation right now. There are not enough oxygen beds and ventilator beds, and a lot of NGOs and volunteer groups are trying to deliver oxygen cylinders to people's houses. But COVID is the kind of disease where if you have a serious case of COVID, then you're really, really, in need of oxygen, and cylinders at home are not going to be able to cut it for too long. And so patients are just kind of, patients and their loved ones are just calling up hospital after hospital, getting an engaged ringtone, not knowing whether they should leave their house and rush to the hospital, because they could just as well reach there and be told that there's no bed at all. So it's absolute chaos, and it's completely man-made, and it's totally heartbreaking.
Now, in the midst of all of this desperation, there's also a raging black market, I'm reading, in oxygen, in drugs like remdesivir. What sort of prices are people willing to pay for these things?
So I had written about the black market last year for remdesivir and tocilizumab, and people are having to do all kinds of things. And I think in a lot of cases, people may not know what drugs they're actually getting, in the sense, I want to believe that by and large, people have actually got the drug, the right drug that they're looking for. But one of the people I interviewed told me that, he traveled from one city to another city. He drove overnight for several hours to get to another city. And he met a dealer. I mean, it was literally a drug deal. He met a dealer on the road who, didn't want to meet him in a chemist shop or in any sort of a definite place, but just kind of met him on the road and slipped the drugs to him. That's a situation where people are just moving around in the dark, absolutely. And, there's something definitely wrong, because these drugs are, made by big companies like Cipla and Dr. Reddy's. These are big pharma companies in India. How is it that, their stocks have managed to slip out of their official channels, and you can't get it from Cipla, but you can get it from a guy on the street? So something's definitely wrong with what's happening, and patients are in absolute distress, because hospitals, which ideally should have, if the doctor in the hospital tells the family that we need this drug for your loved one, the hospital should be able to organize that. But the hospitals are just telling people that, you have to organize this on your own. So, that is the situation. And people are left to all kinds of devices, including the black market.
And also for oxygen, black market oxygen?
I haven't myself reported on this, but I have been seeing reports of, people being charged all kinds of exorbitant amounts for an oxygen cylinder. From my reporting, what I do understand is that there isn't actually a formal retail market at all now. So because the demand is so large, and because the sources and the vendors are so scattered, everything you're getting is sort of, not really off the shelf, but it's just, it depends on which vendor you're talking to, and if he's willing to, cut you a stock of the oxygen that he has. So it's more of a situation, I think, with oxygen, where everything is now kind of informal, if not black. If you can get it through an NGO, then they do all of this kind of back end. But if you're trying to negotiate for one cylinder or two cylinders yourself, then you're likely to be paying a much higher price, and you're really at the mercy of the vendor that you're dealing with.
Yeah, it really underlines the sort of failure of the state, doesn't it, when you get that sort of situation in a crisis like this. Now, on the weekend, Prime Minister Modi gave a speech to the nation. Did he offer any plan to try and contain the virus?
No plan, really. This he does a monthly address to the nation, which is sort of like a podcast that he hosts. He gets different people from around the country to come in and kind of chat with him. So, of course, the focus was on COVID, and he was speaking to different doctors. But it's more like a friendly chat, and the intention very much is to keep things upbeat. And he's been having this for many years, so it's not really, you know, a somber address to the nation, you know, kind of offering to handhold us through this situation. So he did say what this government has been saying a lot, which is that they successfully defeated the first wave. And he repeated the same thing, you know, that after successfully confronting the first wave, the country was full of enthusiasm, but the second wave has shaken us up. So there is a belief in the government that they did a good job. I mean, of course, logic defies that, because if they did a good job, then we wouldn't be here. If the first wave was contained, we wouldn't be here. So yeah, that was definitely the mood, the tone, the content of what he said. But nothing new in terms of an actual breakthrough on how we're going to sort the situation out.
But somebody in the Indian government found time to ask Twitter to block some of the critics of the government's handling of the crisis.
Yeah, I mean, this is a government that spends a lot on its own marketing and publicity. And so it's not shocking that, their narcissism has been pricked. And Twitter, even though it's sort of become, the governance portal for the country, it also means that, you know, people posting photos and videos of, let's say, crematoriums and burning pyres, all of this kind of, makes the government look bad. And instead of, let's say, taking that on board and saying we should not have such a regretful situation, let's fix it. I think that the approach all along, really, and if it wasn't this government, it would have been another government. But the approach has always been to silence critics and cover up as much as possible and put as much of misinformation and spin out there as possible. So this government has many influential people on social media as well. And, they are also putting a spin on everything. They're sort of putting the spin which says that, state governments were to blame for not installing, let's say, oxygen plants or not ramping up bed capacity. But in India, health is handled as an interaction between the center and the state. And states have really been pushed for funds in the last 1 year with this pandemic. The center has not been releasing a lot of money to states. So, states also have their back against the wall. But influential people on Twitter who are aligned with the government have been doing their best to put out that spin and simultaneously silence people who are critical of the central government.
In the meantime, though, the thing just rages, doesn't it? I mean, you're immersing yourself in this as a reporter every day. Do you see an end to this crisis anytime soon?
Nothing soon. Nothing soon, unfortunately. Nothing soon at all. I think I was sort of laughing to myself. In February, I went and bought a subscription to a hair salon, thinking that this would be the year, a membership account at a hair salon, thinking that this would be the year that I would actually have haircuts. And I was obviously completely wrong about it. My hair will continue to grow and grow out. But I did think that, with the vaccine coming in, we would see some sort of end, by perhaps the first quarter. A lot of people were asking me also for my sort of prophecies, and I did say that by the first or at least by the middle of the second quarter, we'd see some respite because of the vaccine. But, even that has kind of gone completely out of whack. India doesn't have vaccines anymore, even to give people their second dose. So we are not going to see a respite on this. We've clocked, 0.35 million cases today, and we've been clocking over 0.3 million cases now for about 6 days. And it's all of these active cases who are also infecting other people. So this is not going to come down. This is just going to bloat up and bloat up over the next couple of weeks, really.
Anu Buyan, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much, Linda.
Health reporter Anu Buyan in New Delhi.